Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode.
Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength, and it's also a happy day, happy birthday for Lily! And right, it's a special one. It's a big one. It's 30.
It is. It's my big 3-0. I always am the baby of like any friend group that I'm in. So I feel self-conscious being like, I'm finally 30. But I'm finally 30, Women of Strength. And here we are. And I am stoked to be part of the 30 club.
30, flirty and thriving. How are you feeling? What are you excited about for your 30s?
I don't know. I just think that, like, I love that the culture has shifted, that, like, your 30s are great, and I'm just excited to continue to live life and grow and have one more baby in my 30s, hopefully. Maybe two, if I can convince my husband.
Ooh, I like that.
It won't be two. There's no way that's happening.
But I'm a fan of baby four.
I hear that from everybody that has four kids.
Something magic.
You should just have four. So I tell my husband that all the time. But he's like, we're going to run out of bedrooms. And I'm just not someone that could. I have just kids that I'm just not sure could ever share. Like, I can't picture either of my older two, like, sharing a bedroom or being okay with that. So I think we'll have three. But yeah, 30 is fun. And I'm just, I don't know. I feel grateful to be here and, like, I don't know. And there is a piece of me, I'll be honest, of like, I am self-conscious about always being the baby. And I am just a little excited to, like, it feels like I finally, like, I don't know, get some, like, legitimacy behind, like, I'm in my 30s too. I don't know.
There you go.
I hate that there's that stigma of, like, somehow in your 20s, you're like, you're naive or you're just, like, not as mature. And I don't think that that's true at all. But I don't know. I'm excited. So happy birthday, Lily.
Yay. Happy birthday, Lily. We are also finishing out Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Last week, we had our wonderful friend Ashley on the podcast telling us, it was so good. And then today, yes, we have Celia talking more about trauma, mental health, prenatal depression, which is not talked about often enough. But just she talks about how it's like this cloud that suddenly when she has her babies, she sees color and she has color in her life again. And she walks you through. She's so articulate, so well-spoken. It's a longer episode today, but she really walks you through every detail and brings you into her life so graciously through each of her stories that you won't want to miss this. And you will just see how she evolves. It is the most beautiful thing ever. So we are going to forego our review today and get into it, and we'll see you after the intro.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Welcome back. We've got Celia here, and I'm going to read a little bit about her, and then we will turn the time over to you. Celia is a mother of four children living in West Michigan, an Air Force technical sergeant with over 11 years of experience navigating maternity care as an enlisted member, and a fierce advocate for evidence-based communication surrounding birth. She never imagined juggling the complexities of a blended family while working to move through trauma, trust a new partner, and find the moments of peace that can be elusive with four kids and two dogs tearing around a small historic home all day. Yep. All right, Celia. Well, thank you for joining us. And like I've said and mentioned before, as a military spouse, about the same amount of time, like 11, this will be our 12th year. It's a lot. And we honor you today. Thank you for your service as active duty. Like, that's a whole other perspective and life that very few understand what that's like, and birthing within that military system. So I'm super excited for you to shed some light for us today on what that's like. And we'll turn the time over to you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And I am so grateful. I am nervous. I am excited. I feel a massive weight of responsibility on my shoulders right now to be able to articulate this the best I can. But I also want to mention that this is the night after daylight savings, and I have a lot of kids, and I'm tired. So I'm going to do the absolute best I can, and I'm just grateful. Yeah, so let me go ahead and start. I want to do a bit of a rundown of my family quickly, for I believe it's helpful context. So I have four children. My oldest daughter is 8, Killian. My second oldest daughter is 7. Her name is Kit. I have a almost 2-year-old. His name is Baron. We call him Bear. And then I have a 3 and a half month old, and her name is Saoirse. So that's our family. We live in West Michigan, as Paige mentioned. And my husband, Cody, my current husband, and I have both of our families here, and we're very grateful for that. Now, as we go back in time, let's go back to 2015, 2016, when I was married to my first husband. I was stationed in Ohio, and I was a new enlisted airman. And I was very much, and still am very much, enlisted by choice. I finished college before I joined the military. My husband at that time was also Air Force. And so this was our life. And we really lived like the full-on active duty life. We'd been in South Carolina. We'd been in California, different places, until we ended up in Dayton. So as we were thinking about starting our family, we'd been married for about 3.5 years at that point. And I was our rank is called Airman First Class, or A1C, and that's E3. So that's a low enlisted rank. And as a 25-year-old, I was a little bit out of the mold at that time. And I wasn't, you know, coming straight out of high school into the enlisted force. I had a degree, but I was doing an incredible job. And my job was aerospace physiology at that time. And it was a job that I very much chose, and it was something I enjoyed. And so by the time that we had thought about getting pregnant, I was not very far into my contract. I was a 6-year contract, and I was about 2 years in. So I just finished all of my training. I just kind of gotten spun up in my shop. I was able to do some really neat missions. It was a big part of me. And so what precipitated the choice to try to get pregnant was that I had an IUD, and it perforated through a part of my uterus. So I was at the MTF, which is a military treatment facility, and thankfully at the base I was at there, we have a large MTF. It is like one of the main centers in the U.S. And so there was tons of services. We had a big OB-GYN floor. It was something that was available to us very quickly. So they're able to fix that issue. I did not have any other issues as a result of that perforation, but I didn't want to go back on birth control. And so we found ourselves pregnant like one cycle after that, which was very much a surprise. But that pregnancy ended up in a miscarriage at about 8 weeks. And so that was sort of our introduction to having babies, trying to have babies. And it was heavy, But I will say that looking back on that experience, I'm very grateful for the care that I received in that moment. And it really informed my journey going forward of being very grateful to be able to conceive, to be able to have children relatively easy after that. So we then did get pregnant with our first daughter, with Killian, just another, I think it was 2 cycles after the miscarriage. Again, super grateful. But what I realized right away was that as a lower enlisted airman, I was not being taken seriously when I was speaking about, hey, I'm experiencing this nausea. Is this normal? And what would often happen is I would go to my appointments, and my chain of command, my supervisors were incredibly supportive at that time. And if I really was not feeling good, or if I was feeling like I couldn't work that morning, I couldn't be on a flight that afternoon, they would allow me to just kind of go out and get the help I needed, which was amazing. But what happened is I would get to the office, or even sometimes walk into the ER, and they would ask me, well, are you drinking water? I'm like, yeah, I'm drinking water. Yes. They're like, okay, well, as long as you're drinking water, like you're good, like you're fine. And it was a complete dismissal. And I'm a person that has a high tolerance for discomfort, a high tolerance for pain. And I just thought, and I didn't know what I didn't know, as everybody talks about it. Is this normal? Is this not normal? And so that spiraled and spiraled and spiraled into what I would consider to be hyperemesis, but just below needing infusions, which is a really difficult space to find yourself in. And I'm not sure 100% how that diagnosis all works, but I was suffering, majorly suffering in this nausea. It was 24 hours a day. The only time that I would feel relief was literally just being asleep. And so I would go to sleep all the time, as much as I possibly could. I would get home from work and just sleep.
Well, I sympathize with you because I'm currently recovering from the stomach flu and I feel this deep in my bones right now. I've been throwing up for the last couple of days and I'm like, ah, yes, to have to do that for long periods of time sounds horrible. And to do it in service, like, wow.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And my job at that time was very physically demanding. And as much as I loved it, I felt like a piece of myself had been taken away. And a big part of my story as well, so there's these threads that I'm going to pull on as I go through all of these experiences. One of them is that I suffer through what is called prenatal depression. And so for a while, I thought it was called perinatal depression, but actually that's the umbrella term. So under perinatal depression, you have prenatal, which is during pregnancy, and then postpartum, which everybody's much more familiar with. But at that time, nobody was I'd never heard anyone talk about prenatal depression or somebody who had this deep sense of anxiety, impending doom, all the things that women talk about in postpartum, I was experiencing simultaneously as a new pregnant mom. And I had no idea what was going on. So really what was happening in that time, and this is again, hindsight, looking backwards, I was struggling physically. But what that turned into was I have this extremely vivid memory. I was sitting in my car, going back into my shop after lunch, and I was looking at my radio in my Subaru. And I thought, like, I will never be okay again. Like, this was this like deep feeling in myself. Like, I have lost who I was. I'm not me anymore. I'm never going to not be sick again. And now looking back, I can realize and recognize that that was that depression. And it had come on so quickly for me when I became pregnant. So a little bit about the power dynamic then too of being a younger enlisted airman. And now at our military treatment facilities, all of our nurses and all of our doctors are officers. And so as an enlisted person, you are required by law to follow the orders of those above you and above your chain of command. And that is something that is drilled into you all the time. Now, mind you, you're still a human being and you're still allowed to say, hey, this person's not treating me well, or this person's doing something illegal, this person is abusing someone else, and you don't have to follow that order, right? But what I will say my first experience of this in this pregnancy was I was at our dental clinic. I was probably 38 weeks. So I had worked through a lot of that early nausea. It came off of me. I say it that way very intentionally, like it came off of my being at about 22 weeks. This was a long time to feel that way. And then I was able to work out. There was a gym in the basement of my shop. I was able to sort of feel a little bit better as I go through. But this dark, like gray heaviness never really left me. So we get kind of close to the end of this pregnancy, and I go in to have a routine dental cleaning. And the dentist on shift at that time was a full bird colonel. So this is an E6, this is like a very high ranking officer. I could not lay flat. Like anyone who has been that pregnant understands that when you lay completely flat on your back, A, it's really not super safe for you. And B, you can't breathe very well. So I had voiced that several times. Like, I cannot breathe. I need to sit up. Like, I cannot finish this cleaning. I don't need this. Like, I don't need to have a teeth cleaning right now. And this colonel walks in, looks me dead in the eye and says, if you don't finish this cleaning, you are going to harm your baby. I laugh now. But back then, I really thought I didn't have a choice but to like finish being uncomfortable and feeling like I couldn't breathe. And so, again, I have so much grace for myself now. But those were those moments where I was just, it was almost an out-of-body experience. Like, okay, yes, sir, will do. And that set the tone, unfortunately, for that delivery. So if I can move into the delivery itself, I did have a fair amount of research under my belt. So I read Ina May, as everybody reads Ina May. But let me tell you this, Ina May is a little woo-woo for me. And I just want to be very transparent about this. Ina May has some beautiful, wonderful birth stories that are so empowering in her books. But for me, it was like a little bit too far removed from my life. Like, I'm not going to go to a farm in the middle of Kentucky. Like, this is not reality for me. So it was a little bit of a block up, right? Like, you read these things and you think like, well, how do I actually apply that to my birth experience? So what I will say is I was, quote, educated, but I was not coherent in what my wishes were. I didn't have a good linear plan of like, if this, then this, or don't want this, so instead I'm doing this. So it was absolutely none of that. So I get to about 40 weeks with her, feeling good physically. I was 26, so I was like living my life, you know, painting a new house that we had just bought a couple months before that. And nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. And I did feel that sense of, okay, is something wrong? Should I be having this baby now? Should I not? And of course, I didn't understand or didn't realize that normal gestation is up to 42 weeks. Everybody's different, da da da. So what I did was my husband and I at that time went into the MTF. It was about 40 and 6, I would say. It was about 40 and 6. We go in and I had had some itching, not on my hands and feet, but just kind of all over my body. And at that point, you're massively pregnant. Your skin is stretching. You're just uncomfortable in general. And I very vividly remember walking in to the labor and delivery floor, which was small. There was probably 4 rooms. I mean, the MTF isn't serving a massive population, but at the same time, there was enough rooms there to have a section. And I got into the bed and a resident came in and they're still Air Force. So they're residents, they're learning, but they're also still Air Force officers. They're just learning OB practices within the medical system, within the military system. And so she's still an officer, still over me technically by rank. And she starts talking to me about induction. And the one thing that I had read in the few books that I read was like, inductions can be pretty tricky. And I wasn't feeling any signs of labor. I had not been checked. I had not had my membrane swept, which was interesting because the MTF took a bit of a more hands-off approach than I experienced in my last 2 births on the civilian side of things. And so that was a little bit fascinating because you kind of would assume that it would be the opposite, but it wasn't. So I didn't have growth scans, didn't have a membrane sweep, didn't have checks, which looking back, I'm like, super, great, love it. But then I just didn't know what was normal and what wasn't. So the resident is sitting in front of us, and my husband at the time was nervous, and I was nervous. And she looked at me and said, I think you have cholestasis. And I said to her, I've actually heard of this, but I'm not sure that I have it because I don't have this deep, deep itching sensation. It's not on my hands and feet. So I'm not sure. I'm not feeling super comfortable about just like having that diagnosis put on me, etc. She turns to my husband at that time and looks him dead in the eye and says, if she doesn't stay here and get induced right now, your baby is going to die. Oh, I know. I know. I know.
Wow.
But it was a lot. It was a lot. And this happens to so many people. My story is not unique in that sense. However, which is horrible, by the way, but however, what that was a complete manipulation of the dynamic between my spouse and I. So now I'm pitted against my spouse by this comment that is made that's not based in reality. I hadn't had a blood test. I had no evidence that this was actually happening to me. And so immediately my husband at that time looks at me and says like, well, we need to stay, obviously. And I just shut down. It was like, well, obviously I don't want something to happen to our baby. So sure, whatever, do whatever you want. Now, throughout this birth, this was an extremely long induction. I went in on a Wednesday at 4 p.m. and I did not have this baby until Friday morning at 4 a.m. So this was a couple days. Started with a Foley, didn't have a bad experience with it. And to be honest, sort of like I said, I have a pretty high tolerance for discomfort. And so I wasn't noticing so much the physical discomfort as I was noticing the dynamics between the care team, who were just telling me what we were doing, my husband, who was scared to death in the corner and now was like on edge the whole time that something horrible was going to happen to our baby if we didn't do exactly what they said. But what I did find is I had a midwife, who a certified nurse midwife, who was at the hospital. We just had one on staff, just one. She didn't have any assistants, just her. But she came on shift. And this was about 24 hours in. I had started on Pitocin. They had cranked it up super high. But weirdly enough, I didn't really notice it. And I did not have any other pain management. I was walking around with my IV pole. Like I was just doing all the things. I thought I was doing great. Honestly, get this nurse midwife on staff, excuse me, on shift. And she asks me if I want to go in the pool. There's apparently a birth pool. Nobody ever told me this. Nobody ever informed me that this option was available to me. And so I am able to go in the water, and it is an absolute game changer. It is different for everyone. Some people love it. Some people hate it. You'll hear, if you've heard any of these podcasts, everybody gets to have their own opinion about what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And that's so true to them and their stories. However, for me, it was night and day different. So I started feeling these contractions more and more. Noticed my Pitocin, I was looking at the meter on my IV pole, and it was never below 18. Like it was high, like it was very high for this whole time. And I just, again, thought that this was normal. So I'm sitting in this pool now. It's been over 24 hours. We're getting really, really close to the 30-hour mark. And I'm like, they're starting to become really regular and more intense, but I'm handling it. Like I'm handling it just fine. And so this midwife is wonderful. I'm probably in the tub for a couple hours. I'm humming through these contractions. And for me, that was, I was like using my diaphragm. I was relaxing my face. I was doing these things that I had read in these books, and I was doing great. Well, the midwife was about to come off shift, and the resident who was with me in the beginning of this whole process comes back on shift. And I said, okay, I know this person's coming back. I don't feel comfortable with this, but I like can't completely clam up. Well, this midwife, and you know, she's a wonderful person and she really tried her best, but she said like, okay, I'm going off shift. You need to get out of the water. And I think we should break your water. So I consented to this. The baby turned out to be OP. So my water was broken and she got into a very bad position immediately. And it wasn't until, let's see, I was listening to, of course, the VBAC link, but as I'm going through my history of all these podcasts that have affected me, as I was listening to stories and listening to stories from this point in my first labor, and I'm taking a little bit longer on this because it really sets the tone for how I interact with the rest of my births. I was listening to birth stories to find myself. I was looking for myself in these birth stories. I was looking for my experience, and I was looking for someone, anyone else, to put words to how I was feeling and what happened to me. So after my water was broken, all hell breaks loose, honestly. And that's also a very, I think, a common theme. And I started feeling just these, I can't even really call them contractions, knowing what natural contractions are now. I was suffering. I was absolutely suffering. And there are so many different parts of birth that I do believe can be valuable in certain instances and not in others. But what I will say is after my water's broken, I was suffering, I was panicking. And this resident all of a sudden said, well, we need to start practice pushing. Had not even checked me, didn't 100% know where I was. So I start this practice pushing, which now is the only thing this whole time as I'm telling my stories, I will say to anyone that I know, please do not. Because what happened to me and what happens to many, many women is that I developed an intense cervical lip because my body was not ready to push and I'm practicing. But what I'm really doing is just pushing myself into a cervical lip in intense pain. So I didn't have an epidural at all at that point. We get to 9.5 centimeters. I was able to be checked. At that time, it was helpful to me. Like, what are we doing? Where are we at? How much longer? I'm exhausted. I'm barely seeing straight. My husband, at this point, to be completely honest, was like out of the picture. Like, he was not even, I don't even remember where he was in the room, which is sad to me looking back, and which was hard for me at that time because I didn't feel supported. I didn't have a doula in the room. I didn't have family because as a military member, and I was a spouse as well before I joined myself, we are very isolated wherever we're stationed. And there isn't that trusted person to just call. You can't just call someone, come to the hospital, I need you right now. So I get to my 9.5 centimeters. I am so intensely suffering. I'm on the bed backwards. So I'm like holding up to the onto the top of the bed, looking at that line of outlets with just like all those little thingamabobs that they put in them. And I remember clear as day thinking, like, if I don't get some relief from this, this is going to give me PTSD. And I remember hearing that come through my brain and like into my body as like truth. Like, I need help. Like, help right now. And so then I asked for the epidural at that point. They pushed a bolus of fentanyl. They pushed everything for me, which looking back, being at a smaller treatment facility, even though this MTF was large for us, they had an anesthesiologist right there. So I am grateful that he was able to just swoop right in, probably waiting for me at the door, to be completely honest. Swoops in, able to give me some pain management. Well, that was not where this ended. So I still have the same resident. And she's trying to now reach inside of me without my consent to try to turn my daughter, to try to turn Killian. And at first, as she's saying to me, I'm doing this, this is what we're doing, I'm freaking out. I'm like, no, that doesn't seem right. I don't want you to do that. I'm worried for her. Mind you, I know nothing about this. I don't know. And to this day, I don't really know if that's good practice, bad practice. But in my mom heart, I said, this is not right. This is not right. And so she ended up trying to turn her, couldn't turn her. I said, no, get off of me. Basically, like, no, thank you. Start pushing. Push for 5 hours, 5.5 hours. I'm pushing in the same position. I'm exhausted. I'm so completely done. And then they bring forceps to the to the area, to the bed. Sorry, I don't know how to say this. And you know what's very interesting looking back? I was not offered a C-section, but I did say, I don't want that at all. And the baby's heart rate, So Killian's heart rate was fine the whole time. So I am grateful. To be honest, I am grateful that I didn't then have that looming C-section pressure over me, which I think was a bit abnormal. And now that I look back on it, I'm like, I wonder if they didn't have someone available to do a C-section at that time. So I'm just curious about that. Have the forceps, but this is the point, and then the story kind of ends from there. But I'm pushing. The resident is using the forceps. An OB comes in behind her. And what I realize in that moment is that she's now being taught to use them, that she's never used them before. And I'm hearing these conversations as I'm like laying in this bed, barely kind of with it. And I say, so this is the only time I advocated for myself in this birth. And I said, I don't want her to do this. Could you please do this? And I'm like looking at the OB, like, could you please do this? He pats my leg, can't hear it, or can't feel it, excuse me, pats my leg. You know, actually, I think she's going to be just fine. And I said, but I'm not fine with this. And then they just keep doing it. Like, she just keeps doing it. Like, nobody's paying attention. And at that point, I'm like, okay, like, oh, well. And so that's the moment.
You want to, like, crawl out of the screen and go back in time. Like, yeah. It's not okay.
Yeah. It's not okay. Thank you for saying that, Lily. Seriously. And I thought it was okay, right? Or I guess in that moment, I was like, this isn't okay. And then the further I got away from it in order to cope with that trauma, oh, that was fine. This was okay. That was okay. They needed to do that. She needed to learn. It's interesting, like the stories we tell ourselves to keep ourselves safe from those memories.
Well, and it's the same thing too, where like our brain wants to protect ourselves. And we don't want to face, we don't want to face that we've been wronged, because we want to believe that we were trying to do the right thing, and we want to believe that we were cared for in a safe way, because that's what we were meant to feel, and we were told that we will be cared for, and that's our job. But by being so dismissed that way, yeah, I'm so sorry that that happened.
And I think this comes up a lot too, just with teaching hospitals in general, is this like idea of, well, it's a teaching hospital, so therefore I must have to be okay with XYZ student in my room learning on me. And the reality is I've heard doula clients say this before, is like, well, they have to learn somehow. And I put a stop and I'm like, and they don't have to learn on you.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't feel comfortable with that. Like, as a first-time mom, I was like, absolutely no students in my room. And as I, like, get a little further down the line, I'm like, okay, like, we might be able to, like, invite some more people into this space. That's the mama that the student can learn on. And it doesn't have to be you. And you are allowed to say no teaching hospital or not.
100%. 100%. And that was the thing, honestly, you guys, that I struggled with the most, was, like, I am a direct, confident person. And I was not prepared for how vulnerable that I felt in that moment, how disconnected they had made me from my partner, from my spouse at that time, how much distance that put between the two of us. So Killian was born. She was perfect. She was 9'2". I had an intense tear. They told me it was a 3.75 degree tear, which, like, What a weird thing to say. Like, I'm like, can you? Okay. Didn't explain to me, like, how far into the tissue. Didn't explain any of the things. But this is the crazy thing, and I've heard this several times. She was born, and I was like, I did it. We're done. Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. I'm so glad she's here. And it was just like a, like, complete mental block that was keeping me safe. So that was my first birth. And like I said, I took a little bit longer on that because some of those themes show up. And the reason that I had my V back was really because I'm looking back at all of the power that was A, taken from me, and B, that I didn't take for myself in that first experience.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So we're moving now into my second daughter. So my two daughters are 14 months apart. Now, after Killian is born, my husband at that time, I want to be able to articulate this really well, and it's difficult. So I'm going to need a little bit of grace here. When a parent, whether it's a mother, the father, experience the absolute monumental shift that having a baby brings into your life, you can either respond in like a very healthy, very positive way. You can respond like sort of okay, or you can respond in a very unhealthy way. And unfortunately, for my spouse and I at that time, he, in so many words, completely checked out of our dynamic. I wonder how much of that was influenced by our birth experience. Maybe that's a question I will never be able to answer. But I was essentially sort of abandoned emotionally and physically by my spouse at that time. So I have this new baby. We're working on our relationship. We're moving into this new house. We have a moment where we're like, hey, I think this is going to be okay. Like, I think we can figure this out. We can do some counseling. Get pregnant 5 months later. So Killian is 5 months old. I find out I'm pregnant. That moment of sort of reconnection renaissance that my husband at that time and I were feeling is gone. And now I'm pregnant again. My job is ramping up. I love what I do, but I cannot be a single full-time working flying. I was on a flight physical. So it was very intense. My days were long. I was pumping in the bathroom of a C-130 aircraft, which is a tarp. It's literally just a curtain that goes around a hole.
Oh my gosh. You're a rock star.
It was not
easy. That's amazing.
It was not
easy.
I'm
assuming we're not talking like a wearable pump. We're talking like a pump.
Oh, no. Like a pup, like I'm carrying, like I'm like sitting here holding it. And in that experience, I think honestly, I was just training because we were doing non-interference flying at that time. But at this, it was like, I cannot do this. Like even if I have on this other aircraft we were flying at the time, which was a C-17, they have an airplane bathroom. Looks like you're walking into a commercial airplane bathroom. I'm like, I can't do this. Like I cannot do this. Now I'm pregnant again. And it was the most difficult feeling of holding two things in tension. And I'm so big now on like really learning to hold space for myself and for others. I had no clue how I was going to do this. My husband wasn't really in the picture in that moment. He was around, but not physically. And what I will say about that too is if someone is experiencing this from a spouse or a partner in birth and after, that's not okay. It is not okay for you to ask for help. Hi, I need your help with this. I need you to change the baby. And they say, no, I'm not helping you. Or they just leave. Not okay. That is abuse and it's not okay. And in that moment, I just had no clue what was going on. So I'm pregnant with my second daughter. Through that pregnancy, I stepped back from active duty, but I stepped right into the reserve. So then I was still able to stay in my career. I had to change career fields. So I was no longer doing the job that I was doing on active duty, which was heartbreaking to me. But my children were more important in that moment. And my life was a hot mess, So I just couldn't do it all. And I had a chain of command that, again, was extremely supportive. And basically, he's a chief now, my Air Force dad. He said to me, "You cannot keep doing this. Like, this will kill you. You cannot keep doing this." And in my second pregnancy, the one thing I'm going to hit on, because they were so close together, there was a ton of overlap. And I was still at the same base, still in the same house. So even though I was in the reserve and I was transitioning out of active duty, I was still being seen at this MTF as a member. And so I was seeing the same nurses. I was seeing that same midwife. I was seeing the resident. Like, I was seeing everyone. And it was incredibly triggering because I would walk down the exact same hall that I remember, like, tooling around with my IV pole thinking that everything was going to be okay.
And well, and I assume there was no debrief after.
No.
Just kind of pick it up.
This is what happened. Oh, this is how you take care of your tear. Good luck. Bye-bye. Like, here's some ibuprofen. If you need some heavier drugs, let us know. Have a great life. And thankfully, I worked super hard. I didn't mention this. Worked super hard in my breastfeeding journey. Got off of a shield. Like, worked with a lactation consultant. My good friend was through the townhouse wall from me in base housing at that time. And she was able to just literally come over and, like, hold my boob and be like, "This is how you do this." And I was so grateful because that's what I needed at that time. And I felt so loved. Like, there's glimmers. Like, even in the darkest moments, like, there's glimmers of joy and there's glimmers of hope. And the women in my life, my friends, really, like, created that for me. So in through my second, I'm not going to really go much through that pregnancy mentally. That was very difficult, obviously, very difficult in my relationship. But I was trying to do my best I could for this baby. Get to the end of my pregnancy. So this is around September. She was born in September. I had asked the MTF. I, again, didn't really do anything. Like, I was in just survival mode at that point. Like, surely it must go better this time. Like, surely things can't go this badly. And they didn't physically. But what I did ask was, I don't want to be in the same room, because I don't want to be in the exact same space I was. I do not want to have this particular provider. And, like, that's it. So we get to the day of. I am checked. I have a membrane sweep. I ask for it. This time around, I'm feeling like a very heavy, like much heavier and much lower than I did the first time. Second baby, it's kind of par for the course. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I think this baby's pretty big. Like, I think she's pretty big. But again, no growth scans. So, okay, this was fine. Get to the birth. I am 4 centimeters with a bulging bag. And they basically say, "Hey, do you want us to break your water?" And at that point, this is hard to even say out loud. I said, sure. There was so many other things going on, so many other dynamics in my life. Now I have a lot of grace for myself. But man, I look back on that, I'm like, what were you thinking? Like, you did the same thing again. Like, what is that, the definition of insanity? Come on. And so they break my water. Goes from 0, no contractions, to 160 immediately. Like, I am in transition. So I knew that the baby was low. And, like, that was my intuition speaking. That baby was so low, I felt her click, like, into my pelvis as I'm standing up. And it was a wild experience, guys. But I was not prepared and I didn't have the support. And I freaked out. And I was like, not again, not again, not again. I can't do this again. So I'm asking for the epidural immediately. I get the epidural, which is great. And then I push twice and she's born. And this baby is 9/12. And I have maybe a second degree tear. And I'm like, this is amazing. I've done it. Hooray. You know, the birth of my dreams, right? I don't know what I was thinking really at that time. But I was able to move through that experience with some grace. Fast forward. Okay. Break. My husband at that time chose to leave our family. So I am divorced at this point. I move back to Michigan. And I come back to where my family is here in West Michigan. I'm in the Holland, Zealand area. And one of my childhood best friends, his name is Cody, and I'll refer to him by his name from here on out. Cody comes into my life. Killian is 2.5, Kit is 14 months, and just, like, dives in. Hey, can I get you some groceries? Hey, do you need to go to the gym? I'll watch the girls. Like, what do you need? And at this point, I've transferred now from the reserve down in Ohio still into the guard in Michigan. So I'm still in the military, but I have a pretty intense degree of separation in the guard. I am traditional, which means I'm part-time. That, excuse me, gave me the ability to still be in the military, which I genuinely love and enjoy. But then I'm also able to be a mom and I'm able to be home and do the best I can. I go to seminary in that time period. My faith is really important to me, a big part of my life. I use my GI Bill. That's how I stay home with my girls. So I finish my master's degree and I marry my husband. So my current husband, Cody. So we're talking about having more kids. And I did not realize, and nor was I prepared for in that time, the amount of effort that it takes as someone in a blended family in a new experience with a completely different partner to stop projecting what I felt in my body from my first experiences with my first husband. And Cody is a saint. I say that we're all human beings, right? But he's incredibly patient, incredibly empathetic. Listen to me, listen to my processing. This is what I'm afraid of if we have more kids. This is what I'm excited for if we have more kids. So we ended up coming to the decision that we were going to have more and that was something that we were going to consciously do. So we get pregnant very easily and quickly, thank you, Lord, with our son. Right away, I feel the world gray out again. And I am so confused because I assumed that so much of what I dealt with emotionally in my first two births was because of my dynamic with my first husband and partner abandonment and all these other things. And now, like, I feel the same way. How is this possible? So that's when I started thinking, like, this has got to be something else. Like, this has got to be something different. And I start to take a little bit more seriously what I'm feeling in my body, intense anxiety, insane intrusive thoughts. So these intrusive thoughts that I'm dealing with are just constant. And what I noticed was that when I was scrolling social media, it would get worse and worse and worse. And for me, that was a major aha moment that something is off about me. I don't feel like I'm going to harm myself or others. However, this is really serious. So I don't feel like I need to go on meds for this at this moment. Completely up to the individual. If you are having those feelings and you feel like a low dose of something or whatever dose, honestly, you're dealing with your providers who are hopefully taking care of you. I have no judgment of that. But for me, I didn't feel like that's what I needed. What I needed was self-awareness. I needed to know what was going on with me. So through my pregnancy with my son, I remember having so many conversations with Cody, like, why do I feel this way? Like, you are not him. Like, we have a new life. My life looks completely different than it did 3 years ago, 4 years ago when the girls were born. And I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that I'm bringing this in. We had the dumbest fight when I was pregnant with Bear, with my son. Cody brings home a tub of OxyClean. It's the wrong OxyClean. And I am livid, Like, I could not control my emotional response. And it's kind of lives in infamy now between us because it was in that moment where I was like, I know what this is. Like, I know what this is. This is depression. This is something I'm dealing with in pregnancy. We need to figure out how to deal with this. Get through the pregnancy. Get to the end. Now, I'm still not as informed as I needed to be, but I'm better. I'm like incrementally each time, you know, like maybe that's okay that I just get a little bit better each time. So I am working with a certified nurse midwife at a hospital close to us, and she is very, very supportive. Her name is Kara, and I actually ended up using her throughout my VBAC as well. So through that pregnancy, through working with Kara, I knew there was a couple more things that I had learned that I didn't want to be the same. And what we ended up doing as well. Oh, I need to go back for a second. So in this pregnancy, Cody, he was born at home and delivered by a home birth midwife in the 90s, which like, OG, his mom is like the crunchiest, amazingest woman and had two home births in like 1992 before it was really cool. So he was very open to looking for a home birth midwife. So we did end up finding a home birth midwife. And at first I thought, okay, this is the direction we're going. This is great. Well, I felt like when we started working with this midwife, she was extremely well respected in the community, over 3,000 births, like amazing. Like had been, we found out that she delivered my cousins, two of my cousins. It was like, this was wild. But I wasn't clicking with her. And she wasn't holding space for my previous experiences in the way that I needed. And I felt like, oh, I thought that home birth midwives, like this was supposed to be totally different. Like this was supposed to be a totally different experience. And it really kind of wasn't for me. And I was feeling a bit dismissed. And I want to say that because so often I think we hear these wonderful home birth stories, HBACs, first time mom's home, amazing. But that's not 100% of everyone's experience. And I just want to like kind of bring that into the mix a bit because we ended up.
That's so important.
Thank you. Because yeah. Okay.
And same thing like, with doulas.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Well, like providers, doulas, I mean, any profession, right? But like, none of that is immune from. There are great home birth midwives. There are not so great home birth midwives. There are amazing OBGYNs. There are not so amazing OBGYNs. And I think when we start to, in the birth world, get stuck on like the only provider that can possibly be good is this type of provider, whether it's an OB, a home birth midwife, a CNM in a hospital, when we get hung up on like the title instead of the like human behind the title, we run into like a lot of trouble. And so good on you, Celia, for like seeing that and saying like, you're not the person for me. And that's okay. Just because she was the person for 3,000 other births doesn't mean mm-hmm. that she has to be your human.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I felt a bit crazy at the time. I was like, am I really going to fire a home birth midwife and like go back to a medicalized, like, am I really going to do that? But Cody and I had a lot of conversations about it. And the one thing, and I will say this, the one thing that really pushed me in that direction was I was getting very close to deliver. I was probably 32 weeks. So I stayed with her for a really long time. I said, I really need water. Like I know that I need water. In my first birth, that was a game changer for me. Could you please support me in this? Do you have a pool? Do you have somebody that I can rent a pool from? And her response was, well, actually, probably about 86% of my clients don't even get in the pools. And I was like, okay, like, but I want a pool. Can you please help me with that? And then it was the same response. Well, we don't really use the pools. And so that was my big red flag. And I said, I don't think I do this. I know that's what I need. So sorry, like we're going to be done. And then we moved over to, jump back to then Kara, my certified nurse midwife, who then I was working with at the Zealand Corwell Hospital. So that hospital is about 3 minutes from my house, very close to my house. Her and I connected right away. She's got a ton of tattoos. I'm like, yes, like this is my girl. Like you get it. Like I know that's a bit of a like a judgment, but it was helpful to me. Okay. So start meeting with Kara. We've got a plan in place. If we induce, big if, like this is how it's going to go. Now, throughout this pregnancy with my son, he was moving a ton, just moving. And I was working at that time on a really big data project for the Guard here in Michigan. It was a statewide project. It was something that was really important to me. I was working with like all of our different agencies in the area. I should say I moved into more of an HR role. So I work in personnel now. So I moved over from my job into personnel. It's been a great move. I've really loved it. I love the customer service aspect of it. But I was sitting a lot during that pregnancy. And again, don't know what you don't know. I was reclining a lot. So like I was getting very, very uncomfortable. And I was, as a result, I was reclining. That was not helping me. And Bear got into kind of a funky position. And I knew he was in a funky position because probably around 37 weeks, I started having prodromal labor. And I knew what it was because a good friend of mine, again, women of strength, like women that speak into your life, was like, hey, I had a lot of prodromal labor with my two babies that were in bad positions. And so I kind of knew what was going on. But I had known enough at that time, like, I don't need a girl scan. I don't want to check stuff. Like, if he flips, he flips. Like, I'm just going to go with there. I want the most hands-off approach as possible. And Kara was like, great, that's fine. So we get to 40 weeks. I am oddly uncomfortable, like oddly, like something is off. I had a nursing bra that I had bought that had like the extender in the back. And it's always so humbling when you have to use like the furthest rung on the extender. You're like, it's okay. It's fine. But what I should have paid a little bit more attention to is that the fact that my rib cage was expanding like way more than it had in my other pregnancies. So I get in to have an appointment with Kara. I still don't really want to be checked. And then she asks like, hey, if we start an induction, this is how I would do it. I would start with the Foley that went good for you last time. And honestly, at that time, I didn't feel like it was a bad decision for me to then go forward with the Foley because I was like so uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep, couldn't breathe, all those things. And I'm going to own that choice. And honestly, I think I probably would have done that again. And especially knowing what we knew about what happened with his birth. So then I go in for the induction. We put the Foley in. She allows me to go home, which is amazing. Puts it in at 6 a.m., go home, I got the girls to my mom's house. I was able to spend the day just like cleaning the house, chilling out. I knew what to expect from the Foley. Nothing really happened. Didn't fall out. No big deal. So we go back to the hospital at around 5 p.m., 6 p.m. for them to check it. And they take the Foley out and she checks me. She's like, huh, you're maybe a 2, like maybe 1.5. And I was like, really? That's a little bit odd. So the Foley didn't do anything. And I was at this point, I have it written down somewhere, but I think I was about 40 and 4. So I was like, I was over my due date, which is normal for me, apparently, and gets the bedside ultrasound. Because at that point, I kind of wanted to know what was going on as well. Something fell off. Well, she gets the ultrasound, puts it on my belly. He is as breech can be, like the breechest baby, standing straight up. His head is like in my ribs. Like they really couldn't even get a good picture or figure out where he was at. And in that moment, I just knew that it wasn't my desire to switch everything up, try to find someone who will do a vaginal breech birth at 40 and whatever. I knew that that wasn't going to be a reality and I didn't have the emotional energy for that. And that's something that I also want to touch on. If you're in your pregnancy, and even if you're extremely educated and know what you want, when you get to that moment, it's important to check in with yourself and to say like, do I have the energy for this? This is really, really what I wanted, but I might not be capable of doing this right now based on XYZ other factor.
Absolutely. I talk about that a lot. My son was breech my first labor. He flipped breech during labor. Oh. And then my daughter was breech at 32 weeks and I was flipping out. And mm-hmm. I had a lot of conversations with folks who were like, oh, so like you'll try to have a vaginal breech delivery for sure, right? I was like, actually not sure that that's what I would have chosen. I talked to Paige a lot because Paige was doing her MAC journey at the time. And mm-hmm. I think that may have been the route that I would have pursued at that moment instead of like, do I drive to Denver? Because I'm like an hour north of Denver. Like, do I have all these other compounding factors to try to access a breech vaginal delivery? Or is the best choice for me maybe not that? And I love all of these pieces that you're throwing at us because I think that these conversations are really important because they're nuanced. And I think so often we get into this like, well, birth has to look this way or birth, you know, in order to do birth right, I put that in quotes, like you have to do it like this. And the reality mm-hmm. is that's not the case. You have to
check. And to continue to give yourself grace and honor yourself when you're not in that vulnerable space anymore. Like we often look back, it's like, why did I do that? Why did I choose that? Well, you're not 40 weeks pregnant anymore. So like, yeah, maybe not pregnant, very rested, you would choose something different. But like in that state, you have to honor where you were and those choices that you made and keep giving yourself grace, even as you learn more. Like give yourself grace for that version of yourself in that moment.
That's good, Paige.
Yeah, I love the way you said that. Absolutely true. Totally what I mean. Yes. So we realized he's breech. My OB, who had been consulting now at this point, she's incredible as well. Her name is Dr. Zagaris. And then Kara, my midwife. We all just had a powwow. They sat around my bed, and this comment, the things that people say to you, I know that you've heard it so many times in so many stories here and everywhere else, they stay with you forever. The words come out of someone's mouth and they like embed in you, and for better or for worse. So Dr. Zagaris, we're talking about all these options. And she said to me, she said, I know you don't want a C-section. I know this is not what you were hoping for or looking for. And I'm so sorry. But I also want you to know that if you want to just like walk in cowboy, breech, vaginal, you can do it. Just don't do it here. Like we don't have the resources here. And you can do it in Grand Rapids. You can like do it at a bigger hospital. I support that choice for you. And in my mind, I was like, I'm not going to do that. But also like for me, right? Again, if you have done that, want to do that, amazing. But for me, I wasn't going to do it. But the fact that she even like gave me that option, quote, gave me the like voice that for me made me feel like I had a choice. Like I didn't have to just walk into the OR and that was my only choice. So we go into the OR. The first thing I notice as I walk in, am I wheeled in on the bed, is how beautiful everything is. So my C-section experience was very, very positive. Wasn't an emergency, didn't feel coerced, had a really great team around me to talk me through it. So I come in, I literally am commenting to the anesthesiologist, who's the sweetest guy ever. I'm like looking around, like everything looks so new. Wow, what's this? Like I'm so excited, weirdly enough, to be there. That was never the experience I thought I would have with a C-section. And I want to also be very clear that that is, I believe from every podcast I've ever heard, that is rare. That is a rare experience. It's completely possible, but it's not, I don't think, the norm. But I'm very grateful that it was my norm at that time. So I have in the OR, we decided to try for an ECV. So we try the ECV, the external version, and it's uncomfortable, but I'm under the spinal. So I'm okay. I'm like, this was our plan. Our plan was to go into the OR to try an ECV. And if he doesn't turn, then we'll just go straight into the surgery. And I was okay with that. And that was the plan that we had set together in our bed powwow or the comments, all the things. So the ECV does not work. And they start the C-section right away. Now, I'm okay with this. And the anesthesiologist behind my head over here is like, give me a play-by-play. This is what they're doing. Like nobody's talking about their weekend plans. Nobody's making weird comments. My husband's right. He was able to be in with me in the OR while I was getting the spinal, which also I didn't realize was not super common. And then Bear was born. And he had a very low Apgar score at first. Come to find out, he had a 3-time wrap nuchal cord. And then the cord was also like harnessed around him. And they couldn't show me, obviously, but they're like telling me what they're seeing and I'm trusting them as they're saying it. So I'm not feeling like they're just coming up with a reason why this was important or this had to happen. I really genuinely felt like they were helping me understand and I do trust them. So we had some like pretty intense cord situations going on. He comes out. He perks up, his Apgar score is much better. And to be completely honest, I felt redemption. I felt like, wow, again, every time I could, this is the prenatal depression for you. When I'm not pregnant, when the placenta is out of my body, it's like the color comes back into my world. It's like all my friends are having these really difficult postpartum journeys. And I'm a little bit over here like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? But not to say that the things that I struggle with in pregnancy are any better or any worse. It's just different. It's just different. So Bear's born. I'm in recovery. He latches right away. It's amazing. And I turn to Cody and I say, if we have any more kids, we're just going to have another C-section. And he's like, okay. So you come to my VBAC, right? Pinnacle. We're on the top of the mountain. We get pregnant again at 9 months. So Bear's time. And this is intentional. We wanted to have them closer together. I dislike being pregnant. It's difficult for me in all the things that I've already mentioned. So we do it. We back to back. We that's not what I meant to say. We do it very quickly. We might need to edit that.
We know how babies are made.
We know how babies are made. Yes. So anyway, we get pregnant again. And at first, you guys, I cannot continue. This is hilarious. Okay. Whew. All right. So I go into my first appointment with my last baby, with this last pregnancy, thinking I'm going to have another C-section. That was amazing. My recovery was good. I forgot to mention that my recovery was good. I did not have any complications. It all went really well. Well, go into the appointment, meet with my midwife, Kara. Again, she's wonderful. The hospital, 3 minutes from my house. We start talking about what birth could look like, whether it's a scheduled C-section, or she did bring up like, hey, I think you might be a good candidate for a VBAC. And I was like, I don't know. Like, my vaginal births were really bad. Like, you know all the things. I had all this history with her. And I kind of left the appointment meeting with her thinking like, I'll think about it maybe, but I didn't have any resources. So I leave that appointment. I literally go on Spotify and I type in VBAC and VBAC link pops up. And I'm like, oh, what is this? Because I listened to a lot of birth stories at that point. I was listening to The Birth Hour a ton. I was listening to like Happy Home Birth. I was listening to a bunch of other things. But I hadn't ever found the VBAC link because it wasn't super relevant to my life at that time. So I find the VBAC link and I start listening to the first couple stories. And Megan and I listened from like episode one. I was like, I need to know these people. Like, I need to know Megan. I need to know Julie. I need to figure this out. So I'm listening and I'm listening and I'm listening. And I'm like, this is kind of interesting. This feels like something that I would want to do if I didn't have all this birth trauma. But I have all this birth trauma. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's something I want to go at. Get to my second appointment. I'm at with a different, Kara's not there that day. So I'm with a different midwife. I get a medical assistant who brings me back out of the waiting room, asks me to get on the scale. I have said from the beginning of this last pregnancy, I'm not going to be weighed. That was just one thing that I was going to do. That was for myself. I don't need to read it in my chart about how I've gained too much weight. This is not good for my mental health. This is not going to affect the outcome of my birth. Like, I'm not doing this. So I get to the scale and this medical assistant, I tell her, you know, no, thank you. I think that I'm good. I'm not going to be weighed this pregnancy. She looks at me. She says, well, what other things are you not going to do? And I was like, well, I just kind of was caught off guard. And I'm not like a nicey people pleaser when someone's rude to me. However, in that moment, I was like, restraint, restraint, restraint. Like, I'm not going to go after this woman. Everybody's allowed to have a bad day. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. I said, well, actually, you know, it's just something that's really important to me. And I left it at that. So we get into the room. She comes into the room with us and then says something else like, oh, so I don't think you're probably going to do the syphilis test either then, right? And I look at her and I said, yeah, you're right. I'm not going to do that. Like, I don't really feel the need. Like, we're okay. That moment, the midwife then comes in after her, starts talking to me about this scheduled C-section that's in my chart that I want. And I look at Cody and I look at this midwife and I said, I think I want to have a VBAC. Like, nope. I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to have a VBAC instead. And it's funny to me because it was this individual person who had an individual day who really wasn't that terrible to me. There's a lot of other much worse things that have happened to me in my births. But this was almost like, no, I don't think you should have as much autonomy as you want. And like, no, I don't think you should make the choices that are best for you. And I just, in my mind, was like, I'm going to make all the choices that are best for me. I'm going to have all the autonomy And I don't think a scheduled C-section is going to really like do it for me anymore. Like, so I just took a total turn, totally on the VBAC train.
Zero tolerance for BS. We are like, yes. I see it growing like over the course of your birth. We're like, nope, no more. Good for you.
Yep. 100%. And again, I like describe it as like, I'm climbing this mountain and like, I'm falling off cliffs and I'm slipping down. And then I get to this beautiful precipice and I'm like, this is where I need to be. And I need to go up there. Like, this is it. Like, we're going to continue here. And so at that point, I then hear multiple times that this hospital does not support VBAC. You can't have a VBAC here. And then the other hospital in Holland was, so there's two big hospitals close, very close to me, which I'm familiar with, comfortable with. Nope, we don't do VBACs either. So sorry. So I'm basically shuttled into this other pot of patients that have to go to the large hospital in Grand Rapids, which is Butterworth Corwell. And I don't want to go to Grand Rapids. And I start feeling this sense of anger. And I'm not quite sure where this is coming from. And what I realized through this process of going through appointment after appointment after appointment, where, and mind you, I'm not seeing my trusted midwife right now because I'm thinking, well, if I stay here in Zealand and do co-care, then I'm not going to know anyone in Grand Rapids. And I don't want to walk back into a situation where I don't know anyone and I'm just given whoever. There's residents in Grand Rapids. I cannot have another resident in my room. Absolutely not. Not happening. So then I try to transfer my care officially over to this larger hospital so that I can start meeting people. Well, as I transfer the care technically over there, I start getting kind of the how do you say this? Merry-go-round of people, just a different person each time. And every single person I talk to, did you know that you have a chance of uterine rupture? Do you know that if you go out over your due date, you're going to have a shoulder dystocia? Like, it was every single appointment that someone would say to me something negative about the choices that I was making. Now, what was so I was so grateful for at this time was Cody was on my side. I'm on my team. But he was nervous. So he was nervous about a VBAC. He was nervous about hiring a doula. But I said to him, like, this is extremely important to me. I need you to trust me on this. And as a partner who's supportive and who gets it and who's like in it with you, he was like, yes. Like, okay, maybe I don't love this. Maybe I don't love that I'm spending money in this way or doing this. But he did it. And he did it for me because he loves me. And as we're going through this journey, he's also realizing like, oh, this is why we hired our doula. And this is why we're having these conversations and these appointments. So I want to move forward a little bit because this is a long story. So halfway through the pregnancy, we start to realize that we have two choices. We can either transfer our care back to Zealand for co-care, but still run the risk of knowing someone, no one in Grand Rapids, or we can just stay on this merry-go-round, expect that things are going to go really, really bad, and just be completely prepared to say no to this, yes to this. And so what we did was the two of us sort of created a hierarchy of needs. And so I needed autonomy. So I didn't want an IV put in right away. If I didn't need one, if I was drinking water, great. If I needed one and I felt like I couldn't hydrate myself, I was open to that option. And I think that's the biggest thing in the medicalized system is like, if you're completely closed off to absolutely everything, everything's going to be a fight. If you're completely open to everything, you put yourself in a really vulnerable position. So I tried to really walk that middle ground. Now, I also, again, want to say, if you're a person who needs to be completely closed off to everything or completely open to everything, that is your journey. You are not lesser because you're on one side or the other side of the spectrum. For me, I needed to be in the center. I needed for me to be able to say, this is why I don't choose this, but if this happens, I'm okay with this. So we're moving forward. I choose not to do any growth scans. I choose not to have any checks. We decided to stay with co-care in Zealand, so I'm still not seeing anyone in Grand Rapids. But towards the end of the pregnancy, I was feeling like the baby was pretty small comparatively. And she even commented like, you look a little bit smaller. And I was like, thank you so much. I do feel smaller. like, it wasn't a huge body image thing, but for me as a giant pregnant person, you're like, well, I'm small? Thank you. Yes, great. So we get to 40 weeks. She's not asking me for growth scans. I'm saying, no, I don't want to do these things. I'm starting to hear, okay, but not necessarily from her, but from other people in the office, maybe we should start thinking about induction. Maybe we should schedule this, that, and the next thing. So for me, I put on the books, I will be okay with an induction at 41 and 6. I said at 42, that's where I start to feel uncomfortable, and that's my personal choice. And that's all the research I've done, all the peer-reviewed articles that are available through the VBAC link, every story I've listened to. It's like, I get to choose. I just get to choose. So I get past 40 weeks, my water breaks. Never happened before. I told my friends, I'm like, my water's not going to break. Water breaks. Very slow, but it's throughout the day. So we have got a slow leak. I understand what's going on, da, 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 da. And in that moment, that whole time, I didn't want to go to Grand Rapids, didn't want to go to the big hospital, didn't want to do that. All of a sudden, I started feeling like, maybe we should go to Grand Rapids. I think I'm okay with this. I think this is okay. And it wasn't a coerced feeling. I was just allowed to change my mind. Like, I was allowed to feel differently. So we decide to go. My doula, who's amazing, her name is Heidi Veld here. She's with Golden Hours Doula. Huge shout out. She's an incredible human being. I'm sending her pictures. I'm like, is this normal? Is this normal? What's going on? So we get into the hospital. It's been about 12 hours since my water's broken, but we also have to take care for our three other kids. So it was helpful for me to have care for them already set up. So we get to the hospital. I get a nurse who's amazing. She doesn't put an IV in right away, but I'm giving the vibes that's like, I'm not doing anything unless it's my choice. And so even the nurses, the staff are getting the picture. And I'm sent up to the room. Let's see, this is about 10 o'clock at night. We lay down for a little bit. Labor picks up. I call my doula. I start feeling real contractions. I have had nothing. I have not had one check. I have not had any Pitocin. I'm like, this is happening. Like, we're doing this. I can't believe it. I wanted to be in that tub. And mind you, the hospital doesn't allow water births. And I said, I want a water birth. And this is what we're doing. And so my biggest thing was like, as long as nobody really knows how far along I am, then I can make this happen. And I feel comfortable with it. And my doula and I were on the same page. And if that is not your jam, that is fine. But my jam was to have the birth finally that like I knew that I could have. And being unmedicated was important to me too. And so I didn't need all that stuff. You know, I'd gotten to 9 and 9.5 without the epidural. I knew I could do it. My doula comes in, labor picks up. She's doing positioning. We're doing the mild circuit. I'm using her TENS unit. Like, I'm feeling great. Cody's sleeping in the corner. And I'm like, fine. I'm fine. I don't actually need you right this second. I have my support system. We get into the tub at about 5 a.m. And my sweet daughter, 7 pounds, 2 ounces, tiniest baby yet. I knew she was small, 2.5 pounds smaller than any of my others. Bear was 8, 12, was born in the water. No meds, no IVs. The midwife who was on call, I had never even met, literally walked into the bathroom between Cody and between Heidi, scooped up Saoirse, put her on my chest, and I was just floored. I was like, that. And you know what the first thing out of my mouth was? That was so easy. I said, that was so easy compared to all of this other just stuff that got in the way and that tripped me up and that made my body work against itself. And that was such a redeeming moment. But I want to say that my experience with having this redemptive VBAC birth, what didn't happen was a covering over of my previous trauma. That is not what happened. And for some people, that's okay. If that's your experience, that's fine. For me, what it gave me was good, beautiful memories that now live simultaneously next to the hard things. And now I get to think about these things. And sometimes I get to think about the things that happened to me I don't want to think about. But that's like holistically who I am and my story. And I'm so grateful now to have that added to my life. So, yeah.
Oh, that is so touching, Celia. And that's so insightful. And that's something that we need to remember is like a VBAC doesn't fix the things that happened. It doesn't erase the things that have happened. And even I sent a message to a friend just this morning where I was like, oof, these are some things that I've been feeling about my first couple births lately. Like things that I'm now learning more about that I'm like, ooh, that happened. And there's a lot of that layered in your story. And it's almost like when you have something that is so easy and beautiful and wonderful, like as it should be, it stings even more, those things mm-hmm. that happened before mm-hmm. that shouldn't have. So I love that you're like, I have this dichotomy and this makes me who I am. And there is beauty in the mess a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. I have to know what was like, sorry. Because I had a hospital water birth too, but mm-hmm. our hospital supports hospital water birth. So like my mm-hmm. midwife was like, oh, we were on board. What was everybody's reaction? Like, okay, so like there's no nurses in here. So you're just in there. It's you, your husband, your doula. And then you have a bit like give us like a little bit of a play by play of like
what was
everybody's reaction. I gotta know.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. I feel like I've been talking for so long. I'm like, now I got like really fast at the end of the VBAC. I'm sorry. Okay, so this was my dream situation, was to have this water birth, whether it was allowed or not, and then to like have my headphones in and be listening to my music and like for nobody to touch me. And as I'm getting into the tub, mind you, I have not been checked. I was not checked at all this entire time. I was open to being checked if I needed to be, but like I didn't need to be, so I wasn't. And to be honest, I didn't even have to deny that many checks. But what happened, or requests for that, what happened was this was my plan with Heidi, with my doula. I said, I need to get in the water and I don't want you to call anyone. Like you, I do not need you to call anyone. I'm going to know when I want my body to push. I want all these things. And I'm just going to sit in this and I'm going to wait for it. And thankfully for me, that actually came really quickly. So in that about hour and a half, the nurse was like hovering a bit outside the door, but like nobody was really talking to her. And I was just in the tub having contractions. They didn't know how far I was. I was listening to my headphones. I was vocalizing through them just fine. So I really think it was a situation where they just didn't know or they knew, but they knew enough from my chart at that point that so many people had written all these things I wasn't going to do that they just weren't going to challenge me on it. And so the reaction when the baby came out, surprisingly, was like, oh, okay, this happened. This is interesting. And I didn't get pushed out of the tub, which was something that Heidi warned me about, because she had had a client previously that had a water birth at this hospital that didn't allow it. And basically she said an OB like manhandled her client like out of the tub. And I said to her, like, I will not allow that to happen. Like, I will push them off of me. Like, they will not be able to touch me without my consent, full stop. And I don't know if maybe just that vibe was given off when I got into this hospital where I was like, no, Ivy, no, I'm good. I'm good. Or the Holy Spirit was just with me and gave me the people that I needed in that moment. And I hold space for that too. So the reaction was really very chill. The one thing I do want to say, I didn't get a chance to mention this. When I got out of the tub, they cut the cord and the midwife that was in there and the nurse, still just one midwife, one nurse, were like, hey, let's just like make our way over to the bed. We'll kind of see what's going on with the placenta. I was like, okay, I've had my water birth. That's okay. I'm fine with this. So we get out, hand the baby to Cody, and I get over to the bed and I'm laying on my back again. So I'm like, don't love this, but also like, let's just see how this goes. So she's trying to kind of like not manually, like go in and take the placenta, but she's trying to tug on the cord a little bit. And I look at her, I don't have any pain meds. And I was like, I don't think this makes any sense physiologically. This doesn't make sense. I'm going to get up. And she's like, what? And I was like, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to squat down and I'm going to see if that helps. So I literally didn't even wait for her to say yes or no. I just stood up. I wasn't feeling dizzy. Thank goodness I wasn't bleeding. That all could have happened and it didn't. And so I stood up and they put a Chucks pad under me and I squatted down and the placenta was delivered. And it was like, I can't believe this is happening. I cannot believe that this is
going so well. I got one stitch, and then this is really how everyone reacted. It is not in my chart at all that the baby was born in the water. It is not in there. So the hospital doesn't even have to acknowledge that the baby was born in the water. And that probably helps their liability side of things. Like, what? That's not in the record? And for me, it was very telling. It was very telling that nobody really wanted to talk about it. Everybody wanted to just kind of get me out, get me to the bed. Here's the thing. I have like one paragraph of delivery notes from this delivery. And it's just literally like, mom is laboring, baby's born at six, whatever, and placenta is delivered, and that's it. So that was it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Nobody cares about your birth like we do. That just goes to show.
It's true. It's true. So yeah, I didn't have like people freaking out. I didn't have people pushing me, and I was grateful for that. But again, I don't think that's normal. So yeah, I'll own that and sit in that.
Wow. Oh, well, friend, thank you so much for sharing your powerful stories and your insightful thoughts and all the things. We appreciate you so much.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much.
There's so much in your stories that I know our community will benefit from the, and I just know that this like first version of yourself, this 26-year-old birthing who felt like she was silenced and lost, is like in awe of who she became. And I think it's so beautiful to like watch your journey and hear about it. And thank you. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for being a part of our sisterhood. And women are amazing.
Yeah. I'm so grateful. It's so nice to meet you too, even over Zoom. And I'm so grateful for both of your stories that I listened to and that really impacted me. And yeah, this has been hard. This has been relieving. And it's been all the things all at once. So,
well, thank you again, Celia.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.